Greetings. I am Zach, employee of Anime News Network and defender of the secrets of Castle Grayskull. This is Lindsay, my fearless friend. Fabulous secret powers were revealed to us the day we held aloft our magic swords and sang... Welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. My co-host Lindsay Leverage is here.
Hey!
And so first thing up this morning is, a little movie called It Chapter 2, which I like to refer to as Stephen King's The Clown Movie Chapter 2. you sat through this.
I did, with my mom.
You did? 3 fucking hours.
I watched this 3-hour clown movie with my mom.
So tell me about your Stephen King experience.
My Stephen King experience is like the foundation of my childhood.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm totally serious.
Your childhood?
Okay, so story time. Lindsay has a lot of cousins that are older than her. There's probably like one of us born every 6 to 9 months on my mother's side. So you can imagine that scaling down, and I'm somewhere in the middle. Mm. So when we get together for family gatherings and stuff, and I would be playing with my cousins, you know, there'd be quite a range there. And the older ones, you know, they'd seen some shit that us younger ones were not allowed to watch. Mm. And this included horror movies in general. So I saw a lot of horror movies that were not age appropriate at a young age that terrified me and embedded themselves in my psyche. So that includes Tim Curry's It. Mm-hmm. I saw Pet Sematary. Children of the Corn was a really big one,
right,
for us, because my grandma had a mobile home that backed up to a very large cornfield in Eastern Oregon. So I spent summers, you know, with that kind of looming over me, like knowing that he who walks between the rows could be out there. Totally. And I'm trying to think of some of his other earlier movies that I probably definitely saw.
You ever see the film The Night Flyer?
No.
Do you ever see The Langoliers? You ever watch the film Maximum Overdrive?
No. Although I probably saw what's the one about the car that comes to life?
Christine.
Yeah, I probably had seen some of Christine. From around that time. And The Shining.
You know what the best one is? Sleepwalkers. Do you know why?
Why?
Because there's a cat sheriff in that one.
You know, there's an evil cat in Pet Sematary too that I, you know, I'm kind of fond of.
But... it's always very sympathetic to the kitties.
So, you know, I was raised with Stephen King kind of in the background, I guess you could say.
Sure. Yeah. So what'd you think of this one?
Part 2, arguably not a horror movie.
Nope.
More about...
I think Pennywise is in it for like 10 minutes.
I know. Like, arguably not really a horror movie so much as a drama about a bunch of adults trying to process the traumas of their childhood.
And escape their hometown.
And, you know, and escape their hometown. I feel like you can get, like, emotional fulfillment from this movie if you are, quote-unquote, a loser. But don't expect to be scared. Like, as a horror movie, it's not great.
It's not, yeah.
It's not great. Hey, it kind of breaks all my rules of what I want from a horror movie, which is putting the horror too much in front of the camera. Okay, like when you make a horror movie, please don't put too much of the like monsters right in front of the camera. They cease to be scary at that point. And that's all it does is like throw the monsters like right in your face the whole time so you can get a real good look at how CG they are and how much they aren't real.
Yeah.
That's not scary.
So I thought this was a bad movie.
Okay.
I thought it was bad, except for Bill Hader.
Sure.
Except for Bill Hader. and a handful of other moments. But, mm-hmm. like, McAvoy, like, barely shows up. Like, he's barely in it. Like,
yeah.
And yet it's so long. Like,
yeah.
Same time, I have sat through It before. I have sat through Stephen King's The Clown one before. So I already knew what to expect from this.
Right.
And the only thing I was thinking was, are they going to do the alien spider? Are they going to do it? And I'm sitting here eating popcorn, watching the movie for 2.5 fucking, like, hours.
2 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah, just wondering, like, when the fuck is the spider going to come in? When is he going to show up? Like, honestly, I thought it was, I struggled to pay attention.
Yeah.
But I struggled to pay attention during a lot of Stephen King stuff.
Sure. I think Stephen King stuff, I think this movie suffers real greatly from a director and writer who did not want to edit Stephen King's book, his 1,000-page book. This book is over 1,000 pages. I tried to read it one summer when I was like 10. Another mistake, by the way. Tried to read it one summer when I was 10. And I was like, well, if I read about 50 pages a day, I can finish this in about 2 weeks. And I didn't finish it, but I did get pretty far into the book.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to, and you can kind of compare this to the Shining TV movie remake and how bad that was. Stephen King's on the record for not liking Stanley Kubrick's vision for his movie or his book. I don't know why. It's a great movie.
Indeed it is.
It's a fantastic film where a director, you know, scared the crap out of and harassed a whole bunch of people until they got it right.
but
that's how that goes.
Art is difficult to make sometimes.
So I feel like I could chop up certain parts of this movie and just like throw it away because you didn't need it.
The Stephen King experience.
The Stephen King experience. Because frankly, like, there's things that work in a horror book that just don't work on screen. Right. A good example of that is, again, going back to The Shining, where, Stanley Kubrick did not include living animal topiaries chasing people around. Because visually, I don't know if you can make plant animals scary.
Yeah. Let me share something with you. So,
sure.
I watch movies with people sometimes.
Sometimes.
And I have watched so much crappy Stephen King stuff that we invented a character. So, you ever see the movie Thinner?
No, but I know what it's about. And that's the one about the gypsy that curses a guy and then he starts to turn into a skeleton.
Yeah, it's not very good.
So I've heard it's not very good.
It's not very good. That movie has a character in it named Biff Quigley. Now, for some reason, that name tickled me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Totally just, it just made me laugh.
It sounds like a Simpson character.
It does indeed. But I invented an entire universe in which, because we were watching like a lot of Stephen King shit together. And so I invented a character named Biff Quigley who would, if you're watching a shitty Stephen King thing, he would just come in off screen. Biff Quigley, mustachioed, would come in off screen, maybe stage left, in a hot air balloon with Stephen King's face on it. And he would speak in a soft southern accent and allow you to escape. He would say, "Well, looks like you're watching another crappy Stephen King movie."
Okay.
And then the downside is, of course, that he just takes you to another Krabby Stephen King.
Okay. That's the only places like balloon exists is to transport you from one Stephen King movie to another Stephen King movie.
There's always a downside.
Yeah,
that's how I felt during this one. Like, Hader was great, and I'm glad that they at least kind of tried the spider stuff at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But because originally, it is an alien spider. An alien spider. Now,
sure. I mean, if we don't want to get too much into the Dark Tower lore of what it is, we'll just say he's an alien spider.
Sure. All right. Well, I have not even touched the Dark Tower. And I'm like, all right. All right. Okay.
Yeah, I kind of bail out on things when authors literally create themselves as insert characters. Like Stephen King appears in that book series.
Well, interestingly, he also appears in the film It Chapter 2.
He appears in all of his film adaptations.
He does indeed. In this one, he shows up and says, "Well, no one liked the ending."
Yeah.
Which is just incredible.
Stephen King seems like a kind of guy that I would definitely want as like a uncle figure or something in my life. I used to read his columns in Entertainment Weekly a long time ago.
He seems like a good guy. He does seem like a good guy, but yeah, boy. It took forever to get through this fucking thing.
And I feel like one of the major problems is that it is way too caught up in its lore, which is something that was cut from the Tim Curry OAV. They didn't bother with any of that Ritual of Chud stuff because it sounds fucking ridiculous.
No, they totally did. They did that. That's in the movie.
It's not in the Tim Curry one.
Okay.
It was cut from the Tim Curry one. They just went back and then they shot it in the face again. And that was it. Like, there was no, like, Native American leather lampshade.
Whatever. They get over their trauma. All right. Okay. Moving on.
I felt like, the Mike character, his only point in this movie is to kind of seem like a long-suffering quack who goes on and on about, like, Native American rituals and we can't remember what happened in our past because... Actually, I can't even explain that part. I don't.
It was so fucking long.
It didn't matter. None of that stuff that needed to be cut. You didn't need it. It was weird, bloated crap. And once you're seeing like someone on screen explain this sort of like ridiculousness, it's just like, what? Now we all have to go on like a quest to receive our memory tokens to put into the lampshade to what? Write around that because it's ridiculous. Just write something else around it when you're making the movie. You don't have to stick to that. This is like a perfect example of why you don't always stick very closely to the source material because it's absurd. It's silly. It's dumb. But it's not scary.
I spent the entire film, you know, like Milhouse, like, when are we going to get to the fucking fireworks factory? When does the plot start?
Right.
This is not important.
My favorite part of the movie is when the creepy old lady starts doing weird dancing in the background and kind of doing a little jig and like off camera. And you're like, wait, is she naked? Is the old lady doing a weird naked dance back there?
You know, my favorite.
And then she rushes the camera and she's like, yes, I am totally naked. Here are my floppy old lady titties. Just look at it.
You know what my favorite part was?
What?
When she vomits in his face and then it for some fucking reason it starts playing Take My Breath Away.
Yeah, why did it do that? That was so weird.
I was so happy. I was like,
I laughed. I laughed levity. Really hard because that was like a good comedy moment. But
oh, levity.
Like,
yeah.
It's the only moment of weird. Well, there's also the Pomeranian. I guess.
Well, sure. Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, that music cue was so like out of left field that I was like, what is happening right now?
I was like, bring it in. Let's get weird. And it, you know, didn't really all that much. But I really did love Bill Hader. I've always loved Bill Hader, though. So
yeah, he's very easy to endear yourself to.
Yeah. If you haven't seen the show Barry, you should check that shit out.
What's that on? Is it on
it's
like
on Hulu? HBO. It's HBO. Real, real good. His creative vision, I think. It's very, very, very good. Anyway, so moving on. What's in the news, Lindsay?
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Christ.
We're recording this on Friday afternoon after I spent all of my morning following a highly anticipated anime court case.
Mm-hmm.
God damn it, that sounds stupid. It just sounds
Are we really going to fucking talk about this?
Well, I mean, why don't we just talk about the what happened in court today? Can we talk about what happened in court today?
Our history with this is a little more complicated than that, but sure.
Mm-hmm. That's true, but I mean, I don't want to take 2 hours of our time.
Yeah, no, that's true.
given the the lowdown on it. There was the court case in Texas today where to decide whether voice actresses Monica Reel, Jamie Marchi, Reel's fiance Ron Toy, and Funimation as a whole were guilty of conspiracy, contract interference, and defamation of voice actor Vic Mignogna, who has been suing them for that based on a series of tweets and evidence he believed he had that...
This makes me want to fucking die just hearing about it, even for
a minute. Yeah, this is painful. That's why I'm talking so slowly. So that's been going on since, I think he sued in April. And, you know, both legal parties have thrown documents back and forth at each other to try and argue yes or no, whether guilty, not guilty. The judge ruled today that Jamie Marchi is not guilty on all counts. I shouldn't say guilty because it's not a criminal case, but he dismissed it. He dismissed the entire case against her. He dismissed most of the allegations against Reel, Toy, and Funimation. He's the judge's name. His name is Chup, which I love that. I love his name is Chup. Judge Chup will issue a ruling in about 30 days on the remaining allegations against Funimation, Toy, and Reel, which are defamation and conspiracy. But I think he dismissed all of the ones on contract interference. Tortious interference is what it's actually called.
When do you think this shit will be done?
I don't think there'll be appeals because I don't think there will be appeals because, to be absolutely honest, Ty Beard, who is the lawyer for Vic Mignogna, was just trounced today all over the place.
Trounced. You remember that scene from the end of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood where Brad Pitt grabs that girl's head and just smashes it into the phone?
I don't know. I think it's more closely to when Leonardo DiCaprio grabbed that flamethrower and then lit a woman on fire in a pool.
That's what it seemed like to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have not written up the article on that yet because I'm waiting for a copy of the court transcript since I wasn't actually there in court in Texas today. I had other things to do, like celebrate my wedding anniversary. So,
oh, well, congratulations.
But the ramifications of those charges being dismissed, they were trying to get them dismissed due to what's called TCPA, which is Texas's equivalent of anti-SLAPP. And anti-SLAPP are laws to protect people from frivolous lawsuits that interfere with their rights to free speech. If a judge finds a party is guilty of filing a frivolous lawsuit that interferes with free speech, you end up getting sanctioned and having to pay not only fines, which will have to be decided later, but also all the attorney costs, court costs, things like that for the defendants. Mm-hmm. So at least in the case of Jamie Marchi, I believe Mignogna is on the hook to pay for all of her legal fees and possibly more.
Get it. Look, sorry. I'm sure people listening to this maybe have some idea how much this has fucking tortured us over the last year. I'm sure they have some idea. So, fuck you. Eat shit.
For people who don't have like any idea about this court case at all, I'll give like a tiny, tiny bit of background. Lindsay Loveridge.
All right. Yep.
All right. I, Lindsay Loveridge, wrote an article in January where I talked with numerous alleged victims, not any of the defendants in particular. These were just convention attendees about their experiences with Mignogna. And they gave me their personal evidence, including photos and testimony about their experiences of unwanted touching, like kissing without permission or putting a hand up the back of their shirts or giving them their phone number giving them his phone number, stuff like that. Not long after that, the defendants, Jamie Marchi and Monica Real, publicly talked about their own experiences with Mignogna. And over the course of the court case, especially in Real's experience, hers involved some pretty serious allegations of assault. And there have been other voice actors that have submitted affidavits as well, alleging attempted assault or assault. So that's all kind of built up to this particular point. And we've all been harassed, right, Zach?
Yeah.
I mean, just outright, like I have personally been harassed in a variety of different ways. I've gotten messages about sexual assault of myself.
Oh man, come on.
Yeah. I don't want to like, I'm fine, everyone. But I mean, I just kind of want to put some context into how much of a mess this has been for like 9 months. Mm-hmm. I wrote an article in January and here we are in September and I'm still talking about it, which is not something I really ever expected.
Or wanted to do.
No, no, not really. So, I mean, yeah, it's been pretty fucking shitty. Just at a professional standpoint of having to kind of put up with this. I had people send me, over the internet, send me like artwork caricatures they drew of me.
Are you fucking serious?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I thought I told you about that, but maybe I didn't.
Get off YouTube, people.
Please.
Get the fuck off.
Please
YouTube.
Don't do that when you disagree with people or you think they're not doing their job well. I mean, if people didn't think I did my job well, that's fine, but like, I don't know, just don't be an asshole about it. I try not to be an asshole to people when I don't think they're doing their job well. I just go somewhere else where I like it better.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so it's been a lot. It's been a lot. I'm sure whatever I've experienced is not comparable to, you know, the defendants in this case, and some of the stuff I've seen directed at them online. So it's just been a lot. I think all of us are kind of tired, you know. So
indeed.
So it looks like, you know, we have an end point, which is at maximum 30 days from now, when Judge Chupp will rule on the conspiracy and defamation charges for the remaining defendants. So,
well, anyway,
that's that.
You know what's fun?
What?
Enjoying things.
Yeah, I actually have some news about things that are one in particular that I'm pretty excited about. That
what's that?
I plan to enjoy. Junji Ito's getting an anime on Adult Swim.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Of Uzumaki, they announced that. And I like Junji Ito. I have all of his legally available manga on a special shelf here in my office, separate from my other stuff. Have you read Uzumaki?
Yeah. Yes, indeed I have.
Yeah. There's a lot of parts of that I really like. I like that story in general. It's just really fucked up. All the different ways it focuses on a spiral. Like this town where everything's turning into spirals in various ways and sort of slowly taking over this all the people there. And so I'm interested to see how the sort of mini anime is going to work when that airs. And they got the composer from the Heritage horror movie to create the soundtrack for that, which is kind of cool.
Well, you know, it's big business now. Junji Ito is like blowing the fuck up.
Yeah, he is. He definitely is.
And that is the result of some talented marketing teams.
Yeah.
But he is blowing the fuck up. And, you know, wisely, it's good stuff. It's, you know, largely because he makes good shit. Except for that movie, Gyo.
Yeah, I don't remember particularly caring for the anime version of that. Mm-hmm. I have the manga, and it's fun as sort of a sci-fi horror ridiculous. I mean, there's some images in there that are pretty scary. Yeah,
the best one is Uzumaki.
Uzumaki is really, really good. Easily, I like some of the Tomie stuff though too.
Some of it, but he's repeated that like quite a lot. So some of it's okay.
He's also got a short manga just about his cats. That's great.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever read the cat one?
I have.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. I just like his characterizations of cat behavior in a way that it's both like, well, creepy. It's like creepy funny, you know, he's not trying to make them scary, but some of it reminds me of my cat.
If you spend all day at home with the cats.
Yes.
There you go. That's the art.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a big artist, and it's very exciting to just watch him just explode right now. Like,
yeah.
Again, big kudos to his marketing team, the people who are pushing him, because otherwise people wouldn't really know about this stuff. You know what I mean?
And his Eisner win, was it last year?
It was last year.
Probably helped as well for his Frankenstein book. So
yep, Frankenstein, which was all right.
Frankenstein is a story. I'll be honest, like, I've never read an adaptation of the original book that I liked as much as the original book, but that might be me being like a Mary Shelley snob or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. No. What you should play is related to our earlier conversation. Tim Curry in Frankenstein Through the Eyes of the Monster, a CD-ROM original adventure.
That reminds me, I wanted to ask with our earlier conversation. So, Bill Skarsgård or Tim Curry then for you?
Look, don't ever ask me that. I just did though. It will always be Tim.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
Tim Curry. Like, I will love Tim Curry for the rest of my life. Like, I'll never get over how good that guy is.
I think he was just, I mean, I just think he was so much better.
Exceptionally
better. And I think it's because you don't see him constantly like you do in the movie.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he has more of a, like, an aura about him where he's only on screen long enough to scare the shit out of you and then leaves.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right, back to the news. That was just a
that scene where he's like humping the he's like humping the library bookshelf.
Oh, I don't remember that part. Like, the parts of that that stick with me is like that, of course, like him being in the storm drain scared the crap out of me as a kid. And then, you know, there's like the scene where he's
she's
digging a grave on the side of the road. As they're like driving by.
All right, like,
waves.
We shouldn't get back to this.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can just talk about that forever.
Is there any other news?
Yeah, the other other big news. Okay, so that Manga Rock pirating site actually. Oh,
yep. Also, fuck off.
They're rebranding themselves, actually. This came up today. They're shutting down and will rebrand as a legitimate service, I think, called MR Comics. Which, I mean, I don't know if they're trying to go like the Crunchyroll route, but they plan to become a 100% official comics platform.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and throw this out there. Now,
sure.
I could be wrong.
Okay.
That's probably a misdirect.
You think so?
Almost certainly. It is almost certainly a misdirect.
Mm.
Now, I don't want to assume bad faith. It's almost certainly a misdirect.
Well, I guess we'll have to see, right?
I suppose. I don't know, man. I have the Shonen Jump app.
Yeah, they were hosting stuff that was legally available for little to no cost, but still put it on there anyway. So.
I already have access to all that shit and don't need it from someone else. I don't need that. So anyway, let's get to the next segment.
All right. We'll have a game.
Okay, we're back. Today we're talking about the Shinichiro Watanabe anime Carol and Tuesday with special guests Lindsay Leveridge.
Hi, everybody.
Yay. Well, I suppose not really.
I'm not a special guest anymore. Guest. I'm just a regular.
And a truly special guest, Jackie Jane, who you may remember from The List, which is currently appearing on Anime News Network. Jackie, thank you so much for coming by.
I'm so excited to chat with you guys. Yay.
All right.
I said yay three times.
Admittedly, I did not have time to finish this thing. I didn't quite have time to get through it, but...
How far did you get?
I got through the first half, and...
Okay.
Okay.
Lindsay, Can you tell us about the show, Carol and Tuesday?
Carol and Tuesday is a sci-fi musical series about two 17-year-old girls from different walks of life. One is Tuesday, whose mother is a politician and she runs away from home to create music. And the other is Carol, who is a girl living in an apartment on her own. She's an orphan and she also creates music. And they meet and hit it off immediately and decide they want to make music together. But how are they going to get more people to hear them? They're just two orphaned girls living together on Mars. So they pick up a drunk, washed up manager, and he starts trying to promote them in various different ways because he truly believes in their music.
Indeed.
That was a great synopsis.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was like, it's pretty damn good. I love when you said sci-fi musical series, like with a question mark. So I was like, that's actually right. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Coming out the gate here.
Yeah.
I think this is honestly Watanabe's strongest work since Cowboy Bebop. I agree with that
100%.
I loved it. Like, I was so taken with it. Like, they just want to run and make things. You know what I mean? Like, they just want to run and make shit. And they don't give a shit about any, like, Instagram. They don't care about any of that stuff. They just want to run and make. And, like, and inspire people.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's really funny that you talk about like how they just want to create, and then I guess you could call her the antagonist Angela, but like she's all about maintaining fame and like staying on top of I guess you could say like traditional societal standards. You know, like she wants to be famous. You know, so but I kind of like Angela too. Like you can relate to her too because she's just kind of like she's got a crazy mom, right? And then she's just so desperate for this goal and dream. But I kind of like the juxtaposition between Carol and Tuesday and Angela, because like you said, you have these two who are just like throwing out everything to try to accomplish this dream, but then you also have Angela, who's like so desperate to accomplish her dream too, but it's just like for completely different reasons, so.
Right, it's like it's like a comparison between sort of the artistic spirit of creating art, and Angela's sort of stuck in this manufactured art, right? So yeah. But that doesn't mean that Angela is, you know, just trying to game this system. She has her own motivations and desires, but she's definitely like a mirror image of the different types of music, especially pop music.
Yeah, and Angela's a brat. Like, I'm not gonna like sit here and say she's like the most relatable character. I mean, she obviously does stuff that God, she was so terrible to her assistant. Remember that? Like, girl. Like, but then you're also like, okay, she's a child star, and I mean, like, they were experimenting on her. And Tao is just like, I don't even know if he's really a human. I don't even know what's going on with Tao. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like she's like enduring a lot too, and I can't even imagine that pressure. Like, it was kind of interesting that they made her like a child star, right? Who's like trying to, you know, like get to the next level, you know, trying to, I guess, convert to being like an adult star. I don't even know.
Yeah. And I mean, and her relationship with her mom is really complicated. So,
yes.
I mean, her mom is intersex and transitioned from male appearance to female appearance. And we only have the first half of the show, but they kind of insinuate that her mother's process in transitioning with that, with the medication that she was taking might have caused her to be violent at one point. So she sort of has that sort of trauma. She left home. She doesn't live with her mother, I think, you know, partially due to that. And then Tao he's very clinical about everything having to do with music. But you kind of get a hint that, you know, that he's got some sort of pain too, because she calls him out on it. Like, are you even human? And he kind of like sneers at her a little bit. He's like, yeah, I get that a lot. Like, he seems resentful of the fact that people question his humanity because of how he approaches things. And then, you know, he seems to be genuinely touched by Carol and Tuesday's music. I think it shakes things up for him internally about how he thinks music creation is supposed to work.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, Zach was talking about how this is probably the best, one of the best works of Shinichiro Watanabe. And I think what really struck me about this one was, one, just how relatable so many of the characters were.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of his past works, I feel like the character's been pretty, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, there's this stark protagonist, stark antagonist. Like, Vicious is just freaking evil. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Vicious is, like, just so evil, in my opinion. You know what I mean? But here was, like, Angela, I felt myself, like, really relating to her. And even, like, at the end, can we talk spoilers? Sorry, I didn't even ask.
Sure, yeah, of course. Okay. No, I don't care. You know I don't give a shit.
So, on the, what do you call it? Like, at the end, when they were like, oh, Carol and Tuesday are disqualified or whatever, I thought Angela was going to be a little B because, like, she, you know, she's a tendency to be like that and be like, they can't perform. Da-da-da-da-da. But instead she was like, let them perform. And I was like, oh, okay. And like, I was genuinely shocked by that moment. Maybe that was just me, but I was like, okay. So it's like, I don't know. There's just, the characters are just, they're just very complex. Yeah. And like, even just talking about Tao and the mother, like, just so many ancillary characters are complex. I mean, and it's so funny, we haven't even really talked about Carol and Tuesday, and they're both really complex.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. I want to at some point, it's been a while since I've watched Cowboy Bebop, but I think it would, since you brought up Vicious, it might actually be interesting to sort of compare Vicious's story too with Angela's mom, because I think Vicious had a similar backstory of, because when he was at war, wasn't there sort of a thing where they did, there was like chemical sex changes was part of his backstory too. He had a relationship with that soldier when they were like in the sand, that like desert area. Does anyone remember what I'm talking about?
We're talking about Jupiter Jazz,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like that, those episodes. Yeah. I mean, like, I think Vicious, like, you know, I mean, I don't know. Vicious is just such a, I don't know. He went through trauma to get where he was, but we never really got insight into his story as much as we did, at least in my opinion. Like, Angela's story, we're seeing a lot more of her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just remember Vicious, we definitely got some insight that he you know, he had trauma. There was like the giant love triangle with Spike and Julia and Vicious, and then obviously the syndicate leader that they killed was definitely like a fatherly figure to Spike and to Vicious. So like, he did have that complexity, but they just convey the complexity is better on Carol and Tuesday. I mean, and this, right. For me to yep. say that is a lot, because I freaking love Cowboy Bebop. Like, I literally have it tattooed on my side. Like, it was the most excruciating pain in the world. Like, you know what I mean? Like, for me to say, and honestly, like, you know, when we first talked about, we were going to be talking about Carol and Tuesday, I'm sure you guys know, I was like, dude, I thought this was gonna suck. Like, I was so
did
worried.
You, come on, did you?
I know, but I was like,
but it's Watanabe.
You know, like, I love Bebop, I love Shampoo. Like, I just like tons of action, and I love like guys who are just like have scars in their face, and they're just so gritty, and like, you know what I mean. Like, that's just kind of my MO. And I mean, like, I told you guys, I was like, some slice of life stuff and like Your Lie in April and stuff like that, some of that can be Violet Evergarden, like some of that's cringy to me. Like, I'm not one to like kind of like, when you said sci-fi musical, I was like, if you would have pitched that to me before I saw this, I would have been like, I'm so good on that, like, I'm not gonna watch that. And then the only reason why I decided to was because it's by Shinichiro Watanabe, so I was like, you know what, like, you gotta watch this, it's by Watanabe, you know. And then I mean, straight up, I told you guys, I was bored the first few episodes. Like, I was like, okay, great. These girls are friends. One's an orphan. One's had, like, you know, a rich life. And, you know, she's not happy about it. Like, I was not, like, into it at all. But then when the competition started and I just saw, like, I specifically like Angela and Carol and Tuesday, and just like we were talking about in the beginning, and just they had totally different motivations. And then I suddenly was like, oh, well, who's going to win here? Like, and how, if Carol and Tuesday are the protagonists, like, how are they going to win here? I became suddenly like hooked on that idea, you know? And I was like, damn you, Watanabe. Like, somehow you made two girls sing like Taylor Swift country songs. Like, appealing to me. Like, I was like, why am I sitting here and suddenly I want to see how they're going to succeed, how they're going to win, when this isn't like about samurais and hip hop, and it's not about like cowboys and like space cowboys and jazz. Like, how am I into like two?
Watanabe, you got yeah. me again.
Yeah. So then I was like, all right, well, I'm interested in that, but if it gets boring, like, I'm like, you know, whatever, I'm just going to turn it off. But then the Mars Brightest tournament started and I couldn't stop watching. Like, the somehow, I don't know if it was just the American Idol formula and I got sucked into that stupid basic formula, but I couldn't stop watching. Like, I wanted to see how are they. First, I was kind of like, oh God, like they're making this like American Idol. And I cringed a little bit. But then I was like, let's see if this is awful. And I'm just like, God, you fucked up, Watanabe. Or am I going to be like, wow, that was awesome. And it was like, I don't know. The music was super intriguing. And I mean, they threw in Sybil and like some other stuff. Oh my God, the Mermaid Sisters. The Mermaid Sisters. But, dude, people are Googling Mermaid Sisters just as much as like Carol and Tuesday and any of the other artists. Like, people love the Mermaid Sisters, you know, which I don't know how, because that song was excruciating.
It was hilarious. It was really, it was really funny.
It was good.
Really
funny. It wasn't the best one though. So, but I do want to know, what do you think of that arc of basically the show turns into American Idol for quite a while. Lindsay, what did you think of that one?
So I enjoyed that arc. I'll be straightforward. Like, I watched the first half of the series in a single evening, and then I watched the second half the following afternoon. It was very easy to just like breeze through the entire thing.
Yeah.
Usually if I sit down to watch anime, I'll watch like maybe three episodes at a time. Because usually that 20 minutes really, like, I don't know, I just get kind of like, oh, okay, I want something else now. That never happened while I was watching this. So I finished it pretty quickly in probably less than 48 hours. And the American Idol segment, actually, I really enjoyed. One, like, some of the
it's good. I like.
Yeah,
I
some
like,
of the contestants outside of like, some of the contestants outside of Angela and Carol and Tuesday actually had good songs. Like
Sybil. That was
Sybil was really good. I hate that. I like her music.
With the French?
Yeah.
The French was really good. It was really good.
I love that one. Yeah, Sybil's song was super. I hope I'm saying her name wrong. I think it's Sybil.
Whatever.
But to be honest, I'm team GGK all the way. Like,
I liked GGK too.
I loved her. And then, but you know what was so interesting was that, like, you were like, how are they going to, because I right away thought GGK was like just as good as Angela and Carol on Tuesday. And then I was like, how are they going to eliminate her? Like, that song was like off the chain. And then I thought her second one was great. And then they were like, you know, they sounded too similar. You're not showing any complexity. And I was like, damn, that was such a good criticism. You know what I mean? I was like, that's a good turn. You know what I mean? Like, it was well written. Like, I was like, that would be a reason to eliminate her, because like Angela and Carol on Tuesday, just they were more versatile, you know. So I don't know, like I totally agree with Lindsay. Like, I just found myself binging this thing. I did it in 2 days too, because the first half was a little slow, but then as soon as we got into the Mars Brightest tournament, like, first of all, I was waiting for an awful song. Like, I was like, one of these songs is going to be so bad and everyone's going to be tweeting about how awful it was. And Mermaid Sisters, like, that song was purposely bad. So I think that's why it's so popular. But like, I've been listening to the soundtrack on Spotify like all the time. And any song that pops up, I'm like pretty much cool with. Like Crystal and even that stupid DJ Ertigen, like even their like side songs are really good. You know, like it's solid. I told you guys earlier, I thought the music definitely rivals that of Cowboy Bebop and Samurai Champloo, and I think that means a lot.
You wouldn't, you know what I mean? I mean, what else would you expect, though? Like,
yeah, true, true.
Homeboy knows what he's doing.
Yeah,
you know what
he
I mean?
He got like an all-star, like composer, I was going to say cast, but producers and whatnot to work on this anime. Like, he got a Red Lotus, Thunder, God. I should have had the encyclopedia page up before I started talking about this. He got guys from America to work on it. He got some European composers and pop artists and whatnot to work on it. So, I mean, he really reached out to round out the soundtrack. And I mean, it's really good.
Going back to Carol and Tuesday themselves, I really, really appreciate their working relationship. And I think it meant a lot to me that they just fucking burst into Carnegie. That's Carnegie Hall, by the way.
Yeah.
That they break into. And they just play the piano and they're just trying to make shit, man. They're just trying to make it. Like, I don't care about nothing. Just let me make this. Let me make this thing. I found that very relatable.
Yeah.
I like them both as characters quite a lot.
I think it would be easy to sort of like pass on Tuesday as a character because he's like, oh, you know, the poor rich girl, she's, you know,
yeah.
But I think they kind of subverted that somewhat. Like, I never found her obnoxious or like overly privileged in her approach to things. And I mean, you get a sense that like it really was kind of a prison where she was living at. Like, her mom could just lock her in a room for a week at a time when she doesn't do what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
yeah. Oh, that was terrible. I was like, oh my God.
It's not subtle.
You know, you guys have on Anime News Network, you guys have like that really fun column where like it's like it looks like a text message back and forth. I don't know what it's called.
This Week in Anime?
This Week in Anime, yeah.
And I was like cracking up at the dialogue between the two guys because they were actually pretty harsh about the anime. Like, they were like ripping into it, but both of them were like, we cannot like stop our love for these two dorks though, like, and it was just showing how dorky Carol and Tuesday were and just like how adorable they were. And I was like, that was truly it. Like, they were like Carol going through her like terrible side jobs and everything like that. Like, I was just like, they're so cute. And then Tuesday, I agree with you. Like I said in the beginning, I was like, okay, great, we have like this rich girl who ran away from home and this orphan girl, this is like really stereotypical here, you know. But they were just adorable. Like, I was on their team. Like, they never did anything where I got like super annoyed with them. So I don't know. I was a fan.
Yeah. They just want to be together and make shit. That's all they want. They don't want nothing else. They don't care about nothing else. Like, mm-hmm. Let's get together and make a thing, which is, you know, I'm pretty sure that's Watanabe's ethos. For the first, you know, like,
yeah,
it seems like that's what he's all about.
Yeah,
I also liked how, you know, he still made room to have a couple of just bonkers, like funny bonkers episodes in the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of like the Mushroom Samba from Cowboy Bebop, but this time it was the AI robot that makes that really, really horrible music video. I laughed so hard. Look, when he finally like showed the results of what that music video was, and it was all like aliased and like,
you understand, you understand this is satire, right? Like, this is satire of the music industry.
Sure.
Like, that's what the whole fucking thing is.
Yeah. I think that's
one thing that the guys brought up in the This Week in Anime was that they felt like Shinichiro Watanabe like didn't do anything like super controversial with it. It was just kind of like, I don't know, like I guess I could kind of see what they were saying there. I don't know if you guys like agreed with that or anything, or wanted to say anything about it. Like, it was just kind of like a safe anime.
I don't think it's safe. I mean, it's far
maybe
more
misinterpreted what they said.
Yeah, I haven't read the column, so I don't want to say like that I disagree with them necessarily. But as far as whether I think the show is safe or not, it's an incredibly diverse show. It doesn't look like most anime as far as the character designs. Watanabe, and again, I should have the encyclopedia page open, but the character designer for the show, and this is evident in Cowboy Bebop too, they're not afraid to make characters that aren't traditionally good looking and then center them and make them good people. Like,
also, transgender people, gay folks, and people of color.
I mean, background characters, front and center characters. Yeah. I mean, it's they really set up that Mars is an incredibly like diverse place, and you don't see that in a lot of anime. You don't see, you know, I can't think of a show where you have like a woman come in with a purple mohawk, greet her ex-husband, and then break news to him that, you know, she's getting married to a woman, and then see them like full-on kiss in the same episode. There's no like obscuring of it. Like, they kiss the mouth right there.
It's not subtle.
Yeah, it's not subtle.
It's not subtle.
Carol and Tuesday react, you know, with the same kind of reaction as seeing maybe any two adults you don't know very well like kiss in front of you, but there's no real discussion about whether, oh, those are two women, you know, that's not like
even not what the show's about.
It's not treated like it's strange or abnormal. And later that same character asks the Carol and Tuesday, so do either of you have a boyfriend or a girlfriend? Which is also something I've never really heard a character do in a show, like, not assume that it would be a boyfriend. So You know, I think it's doing a...
That's the good stuff.
Yeah, it's. I think it's doing a lot that you don't see very often. And I wanted to kind of get back to Zach's point about it being satire. I think the satire part is most evident in that DJ guy. Yep. He's sort of like everything bad and manufactured about music all in one superficial, self-absorbed piece of shit character.
Yep. Yeah. And you really get into it. Like, this show is not... It doesn't waste any time. Like, they constantly talk about, like, Instagram and shit. Like, it's not subtle. Like, okay, you're commenting on how crappy it is to have to make art in a corporate ecosystem now. Like, this is directly what you're talking about.
And we didn't even talk about Peter or Pewter. I don't know how to say it, but
it's, it's like a Russian version of the name Peter. I think it's,
He was hilarious. Just to kind of go back to what I was saying earlier, I think that when what they wrote in there in the This Week in Anime was that more that like they thought it was safe for Carol and Tuesday to kind of, because like they're trying to like shake up the music industry, right? But then they're shaking up the music industry by competing in this like formulaic structured show that is, you know, basically manufactured by the music industry. And they thought that that was kind of like just too safe. I guess that's still not the right word, but do you see what I'm saying? Like, they felt like if these girls are trying to like just like destroy the like music industry, like traditional path, like it, they kind of just fell right into it. You know what I mean? And I, that was like something that I kind of agreed with them with, because it's like, but I guess you could look at it like they're playing into the system to ruin the system or break the system or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. That wouldn't be new for Watanabe. That would not be that wouldn't be a new theme for him. Like I said, I haven't finished it yet, but honestly, I thought it was pretty straightforward. Like, this is how life is for artists now. But how do you succeed? How do you bust it up?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like,
I mean, they even managed to make you sympathetic to Peter in that, he's like, so he's social media obsessed, and he outright admits, like, I have 600,000 followers or 800,000 followers because it makes me feel validated and I need their validation, you know, basically. And he talks about him being bullied and whatnot at, as a kid, and that like how that got him to sort of make or to turn to social media to have fulfilling social relationships. And I mean, that's sad in its own way, but for him it was truly like him expressing himself to the best of his ability and then being accepted for that. And then you find out he's actually genuinely talented too.
I know, I loved his songs.
Yeah, I liked his songs too. And his dance moves, that like whoever animated his choreography was, it was dope. It was good. So it was good. Really good.
Oh man, the animation in this thing is so fucking good.
Yeah.
Nothing looks like this anymore. Like, it's
It was so beautiful. And then just enhanced like all the performances too. I think that like even if the plot is solid, but like even if you didn't like the plot, it's just like it's beautiful. Like the music's beautiful and the animation's beautiful. You know what I mean? Like it was just like entrancing to watch, you know?
Yeah.
So
I loved really loved the one performer who had, well, so Watanabe keeps doing this thing where they're wearing jackets that have moving textures on them, which are just gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I was just like, hashtag fucking goals. Like, I want to wear that.
Yeah. Was it Crystal? Was it the girl?
I can't quite remember, but it was the red one with the thigh high boots. Like, she looked great. Like, he was really stunting on that. Like, I don't know. Like, I didn't really agree with the criticisms of the American Idol arc. I was like, I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing. You know.
I got sucked in. Like, I was like, how are they gonna? It was. I was telling you guys. Like, for me, action literally has to be a third of the reason why I watch an anime. Typically, like, it's gotta have good action. And then I was like, Watanabe, like, how did you trick me into like loving this? Like, it was like he made that competition like somehow replace the action, because it was thrilling. I'd be like, oh, that was a good performance.
Yeah.
Like, what are they going to say about this? There's no way they're going to be able to shit on this one. And then I'd be like, oh, damn, that was good. Like I said, like GGK, I was like, they can't eliminate GGK. Those two songs were great, you know? And then Catherine, she's like kind of like the Simon Cowell-y kind of judge. Like, yep. She had really good criticism. I mean, like, I was just shocked that, like, this anime has literally, like, zero action in it. And I literally, like, binged it in 2 days. Like, I couldn't believe it, you know? So the tournament somehow compensated for that. Like, I felt my heart still racing. You know what I mean? Like, I still was getting, like, caught up and, like, was thrilled about it, you know? So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am a huge, huge fan of, well, let's say pop music. Like, I yeah. like it. I like it a lot. So this is like, this is my fucking jam.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Zach has probably pre-ordered the soundtracks.
This is so
it's
fucking
so
good. It's so fucking good. Like,
yeah.
Don't skip it. Don't miss it. It's excellent. I have not seen the end. Lindsay, you've seen the whole thing, right, at this point?
Yeah, yeah.
So how did you feel about the ending of the show?
So, I mean, the ending's it's a little wholesome, you know, like both people win, technically, because they're both good, which, I mean, but, you know, there's still another half of the show. I don't know when it drops, so it's not really the true ending. It just means that Angela... Oh. Yeah, you didn't know that?
So we have all seen the same stuff. I thought the second half dropped.
No.
Oh, okay. All right. No, then we've all seen the same material. All right. Great.
Yeah, yeah. They haven't dropped episodes 13 through 26.
Okay,
so.
Then. Well, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's still plenty more drama up ahead that I've seen some screenshots. I don't know their context. I think the characters age up a little bit eventually. Like, we've actually followed them into maybe their 20s or something. I'm not sure if there's a time skip. I have no idea. But, you know, I think Carol and Tuesday are going to make a legit music debut, and then they're going to have to reconcile their art with being famous, perhaps.
Yeah, I think something like that for sure. I mean, I'm intrigued to see what happens with Angela, too. I mean,
yeah.
It seemed like at the end of it that she is improving, like she's becoming a better human, but what's going to take over, like, this humanity that is, I mean, I hate to say the humanity that's growing in her, like she's not a human, but, like, you know what I mean? Like,
empathy,
becoming more empathetic. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, is she going to become more evil because of the fame, which is probably likely, or is she going to become a better person? Because, like, somehow that competition, and I don't even know, you saw her relationship with her mother starting to iron out a little bit better. So it's like, they've given you this hope with her. So it's like, are they just going to, like, crush it and she's going to become, like, super evil? Or I'm really intrigued to see what happens with her too. So
I hope she finds healing. That would be my hope, is that she manages to work through whatever issues she has with her mom. And I think that's more in line with how Watanabe tends to do things.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There'll probably be some other kind of villain, you know, villainous character, maybe a record exec or something. God, almost, can we talk about him for a second?
Certainly.
He's so
it
bad.
Will almost certainly be the record exec.
Yeah. I was like, oh yeah.
It's obvious who totally this show empathizes with the most. Like, that's really direct. So
yeah. Dude, I was in it. I'm still kind of in shock. I was just like, not my cup of tea at all. And it's probably up there for, like, I would rewatch this anime. It's like, you know how you gotta, like, sit on an anime? You're like, that's my new favorite anime. I'm like, I gotta sit on it a little bit.
You gotta more. Marinate. Like, gotta marinate
really,
in it.
Really liked it. Yeah, it's gotta marinate a little bit more. But I mean, you know, I did like Samurai Champloo. I know that, Zach, you're like, you weren't the biggest fan. I think for me, it's like, I just love the action. I love Mugen so much. But I think Carol and Tuesday is better than Samurai Champloo. And that for me is saying a lot, because I really love the action in that one. But it's that good, you know? So
yeah, it's,
I don't know,
the
if it
good
edges
stuff.
Out Cowboy Bebop, but it beats out Champloo for sure for me.
Yeah, it's hard to say without a second half to, like, really see how it lands.
It'll be fine. It's the good stuff. This is definitely the good stuff. Like,
do you guys think Sybil will come back maybe as a potential
perhaps
villain?
Has to.
Because I think if Carol and Tuesday get more famous, and given how unhinged Sybil was with like their minor viral status, could be, I don't know, that could be a thing. That could be bad.
Yeah, well, we'll find out. I'm excited, though. It's, boy, it's like, I basically live for this kind of art. Like, this shit was so fucking good.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I was sitting there like, did you actually make this? Are you fucking serious? Like, he really knocked it out of the fucking park. It's really good. I could not give it bigger thumbs up. Like,
yeah.
Watch this one. Watch this. So it's understandable why Netflix kept it in fucking jail for so many, you know, months.
No, it's not right. They should have shared it earlier.
They should have.
I would say the dub is extremely good.
Okay, I didn't check it out at all.
No, you should. He's right. It was actually very good. And because usually when I'm watching dubbed, I'm like, they'll say something and you just cringe. You know, you're like, oh God, they didn't sell that. And I don't remember cringing that much, which is good. You know what I mean? Like, because usually when I'm watching dubbed, I'm just like, oh man, just stop, you know? But I actually watched the whole thing dubbed. I haven't watched it subbed yet. So that'll be a fun experiment. I always like to watch it both ways, you know? So
I don't ever watch virtually anything dubbed because I'm a weird snob, but
same.
I turned this on and the dub started and it was immediately obvious that like, this is special.
Yeah.
This one is special. Like, that's what it felt like to me. Like, this one's special. And it fucking is. They nailed it. Man, it's really good. So I would recommend, you know, whatever your preference is, but if you don't mind a dub, check out the dub on this one because it's quite good. Quite good.
Yeah, I definitely did dubbed because I had to clean around my house. And then I was like, well, I'm just finishing it dubbed. that was how I came to that ruling on that. But yeah, I think we all agree. We're like all three of us are gushing about it. So.
Yeah, it's the good stuff, man.
Ooh, this is a good question. Favorite song?
Oh,
Oh, that's hard, but
Sybil.
Sybil's song was really good. It was really good, but
that's my top three for sure.
Yeah, Sybil's in my top three, but my Loneliest Girl by Carol and Tuesday might edge it out a little bit.
Oh, that's a really that's a good one.
Yeah, that one got me in the feelings right there. It was like, oh, I know.
Yeah, that's
I'm
a good one.
GGK all the way. I love both of her songs, but Angela's songs were really good too.
They were good too, and I felt bad for liking them since they're supposed to be manufactured, but I really liked them.
Hey, you know what's good? Pop music.
Yeah.
There
so
you go.
Manufactured pop music, sometimes it's good.
Sometimes it is.
Obviously, the best song, though, is the Mermaid Sisters one. I'm kidding.
Well, I actually like that song for what it is. So what that song reminds me of, there was a group I remember listening to with friends sort of as a joke. And it was a guy who did that kind of jazz, not jazz, it's barbershop quartet covers of rock songs. So, like, he did Smells Like Teen Spirit, and he did, like, Animal by Nine Inch Nails and stuff. And I it was probably created kind of as a joke, but it was enjoyable to listen to anyway. And so that's what that reminds me of, you know, because it's just them doing barbershop quartet to just a bunch of swear words. I don't know. You could probably actually make a fairly good argument that it's art.
Well, I mean, they said it right after, because remember, like, Catherine just started, like, screaming at them, and then they were like, you guys can't accept us, or I remember it was actually, like, a really, like, heartfelt response about them just being, like, F you to the system, too, kind of, and I was like, okay.
Well, I mean, think about it. They're basically using language that's considered not appropriate for a polite company and setting it to the most wholesome style of music at the same time, and then they themselves say like they're Mermaid Sisters because they're not men and they're not women, they're both, and then their song kind of represents both sides of a spectrum as well. Really offensive language set to extremely wholesome style of music.
This is also a show in which you have basically non-binary characters singing "fuck you, fuck 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 you." It's not subtle.
Yeah,
no, it was so not subtle, and I literally. I was like I said, I was like cleaning kind of, or like kind of like doing stuff around the house while watching. I remember I was like, okay, I'm excited to see what they do. And then I literally just like dropped what I was doing and just was like looking wide-eyed at my monitor. Like, you know what I mean? I was like, oh my God, they're saying motherfucker over and over again. Like, I was just like, I mean, it totally served its purpose. It was fun. This was a fun one.
Yeah.
That's good shit. All right. Aww. Let's get to these Twitter questions, huh?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, first one from Marcos asks, which anime would you choose to adapt into a Cirque du Soleil style show? Now, this is a good one. Jackie, what would you say?
Oh my God, I don't even... God, you know what? I was trying to think of something, and then recently they did this like action Cirque du Soleil. I don't know if you guys saw it. It was I think it was in it was at Comic-Con, and they did like this huge action movie Cirque du Soleil. I was gonna say Cowboy Bebop.
What a shocker that would be.
I know, but I mean, like, it's trippy enough, right?
I
don't, no, maybe that's a bad one.
Maybe you could do it. Maybe you can pull it off.
Like a ballet-ish one, like one that's a little bit more, I don't know. Why did I have to go first?
Maybe like Princess Tutu then, if it was more like ballet.
What do you?
Oh,
no question. Sailor Moon would be great, Cirque du Soleil, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
That would be good. Lindsay, what's your answer?
Gorgeous. That wasn't my pick, although that is my favorite show.
Yeah, I mean,
so
that would be gorgeous, yeah.
I think, what if you did... Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust.
Oh!
Ooh.
Ooh. I'd be first in line. I would be first in line.
The costumes would definitely...
The costumes will be great. Yeah. Vampires totally lend themselves to, like, dance interpretation type stuff, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So.
And contorting and just, like, how crazy the animation was.
Yeah,
like,
and you can get the wires out for flying around and stuff.
Oh. Okay, that's a good choice.
Yeah, there you go. My pick is, of course... Devilman Crybaby, and there would be a splash zone. There would be a splash zone because you're blood on you.
You know what? Devilman Crybaby would be a good Cirque du Soleil show because it's just so, some of those shows are just so creepy and scary, and there's like all the demons in there. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Like, they could actually, I could see that. Like, I could see that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would definitely produce that and upset people.
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
Next one from Steve. Does Carol and Tuesday show improved pacing and engagement from Watanabe's Boys on the Slope? Kids on the Slope, I think. Is what he means. Mm-hmm. Actually, this is something I hadn't really thought about that much. How do you think it compares to Kids on the Slope, if you've seen Kids on the Slope?
I haven't seen Kids on the Slope.
And I haven't either, but I own it. Does that count for anything?
No.
Nope. Nope, it doesn't.
It's better. It's a better show. It's stronger.
Yeah.
It's almost like a refinement in some ways. I think. Sort of a distillation and a refinement of what he was doing with Kids on the Slope.
It's also a different comparison because Kids on the Slope was based off of a book or a manga? It was based off a pre-existing property, whereas this is completely original.
Yeah.
Sure, but what you're doing is comparing an artist's work against its own, against his own stuff. So
yeah, I haven't seen Kids on the Slope, but the pacing for Carol and Tuesday was really solid. Like Zach, you binged it too, right? Or did you break it up?
I break it up a little bit. Because I liked it. So I liked Carol and Tuesday so much that I was like, okay, hang on. No, I don't want to I don't want to just consume. I want to appreciate. I want to appreciate. Right.
Yeah.
I want to appreciate.
See, I consumed it. I need to like sit back and watch it more in depth, I think, because I was just kind of like, I want to see what happens at the end, because I just got so caught up in it, you know?
Sure.
And it's good. But I mean, that I think that that speaks to its pacing, though. Like, there was never a dull moment for me personally, except for, like I said, I had the first few episodes, I didn't get into it. But like, once I got past like the first three episodes, I was like, I thought the pacing was great. Like, I couldn't turn it off, you know? So that's my two cents.
Kids on the Slope is very, it's a very good show. Mm-hmm. It works really well, I think. But if you put these back to back, I think you'll learn a lot about Watanabe as an artist. Like, this is the kind of thing that this guy makes. Like, he makes this. Mm-hmm. I think if you put them back to back, it would, you know, be a good marathon, I suppose, if you really want to marathon things. But yeah, I do think this is a refinement and a distillation of what he was doing there. And obviously an evolvement, I suppose. An evolution of what he was making with that. So if you look at all of it together, you can kind of see the straight line through it thematically and what his obsessions are and how good he is at doing this shit. This guy's a fucking master.
He's a genius. He's a freaking genius.
He knows what he's fucking doing.
Yeah. It's just such a good storyteller. And it's like his storytelling goes beyond the story. Like, it's just like we were saying, the animation and the music too, and just all of it tying together. It's just like, how do you do that? Just have to be a genius. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, you have to be a genius level artist.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Okay. I got one for Jackie. Question for Jackie. Does anime content on IGN do well now that it's a little bit more mainstream? Is it hard to do dedicated anime content on that site? And will the podcast come back? And please tell Miranda, that we miss it.
Let me answer that in parts. So,
okay.
Anime does well depending on the titles. So, IGN's audience absolutely loves Dragon Ball and loves My Hero Academia. And we experimented with posting some stuff that wasn't related to those two, and it didn't do great if we did those specific titles. But if we did stuff like Best Anime of 2019 so far, or we did Best Anime on Netflix, like, those anime does well, you know what I mean? And it's crazy to me. Like, I was always like, we gotta do more anime stuff, because like it's just the exposure and access to anime now. I mean, the three of us could talk about this at length forever. It's just like it's never been before, you know what I mean? Like, when we grew up, it was like Toonami, Adult Swim. I had to beg my mom to buy like a $30 VHS of like the finale of Sailor Moon. You know what I mean? Like, we got the Cowboy Bebop DVD set, and my like brother and I had to like split it as a birthday present because it was so damn expensive. You know what I mean? Like, it just was, the accessibility now is crazy. So people, it's growing rapidly, and I think it's just going to grow even more. Like, it's going, like, and also I think all three of us could speak to this too, but I mean, I was made fun of, like, anytime I wore an anime shirt when I was in school. And now it's like, I'm walking down the street and I see, like, everybody wearing, like, Dragon Ball stuff. You know what I mean? Like, and Dragon Ball's, like, a huge anime, you know? So it'll be interesting to see if we see more titles beyond just, like, a couple being really big. Like, you know, now there's so many Netflix shows that are popular, but it's just like with anime, it's kind of like distinct titles, but I think it's going to grow. You know what I mean? Like, it's already growing rapidly. So I think that was the first question. What was the second question?
When will the anime podcast come back?
So I don't know when the anime podcast is going to come back. Miranda Sanchez was the head of IGN's anime club, and she is awesome. Love her. Like, can only say the nicest things about that girl. I absolutely love her. She's like kind of like the head anime person in IGN, but she also does like a ton of she does a ton of gaming stuff, you know what I mean? So it's just like hard for her to find the time to balance everything. So I know she really wants to bring it back, but it just is going to be like, I mean, we can all speak to this too. Time, getting the time to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I thought there was a question in the middle, but I forgot. I think it was more like...
I think you got it all. I think you got, okay, I think cool. you got the Sorry. Whole thing. It's okay.
You're like, shut up. Sorry.
No.
No, you got it all. You got it all. All right. That actually wraps it up. Thank you so much, Jackie, for coming on by.
Yay.
Door's always open. Always yeah. happy to have you. Thank you very much. And all right, that'll do it for us. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Jackie Jing and Lindsay Leverage for dropping on by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes and, you know, all those other places. Whatever. Anyway, we'll see you all next week.